Live show is on in less than 1 minute.
Live! Live, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, yes, indeed, here we are. Here we are. You are listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. I was just conversing with the folks at the chat room. Those of you at iTunes and other places that stream the show, link to the show, why, be sure and tune in, check in with the folks at the Head On Radio Network chat room. Great group in there. Fine-looking gals in there right now, I want to tell you. They're all dressed in it's just like the soap operas. They all have fancy dresses and high heels on at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Have you ever noticed? Well, I must be crazy. I don't know. I mean, I'm not crazy. They are a bunch of fine-looking gals. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But never mind. I'm not going to go there. Thanks for joining us here on the program today. I'm in an odd mood today, and I am thrilled to be here. I don't know what I'm going to talk about today. I don't have a thing planned, really. I will mention right off that we are coming to you from the Blue Waters and Sandy Beaches of beautiful Fort Myers and Naples area, Florida. And it's a fine day here. And I understand it's getting pretty nice up north and all that, too. My brother lives in Phoenix, and he tells me it's getting pretty good out there as well. So we'll be heading into that 4 o'clock rain every afternoon season coming up pretty soon. And we're getting things dried out here at in the studio building from the water main break next door. What a nice deal that was. Oh, boy. Fans are gone, and the official mascots of the Guy James Show, Kukla and Sophie, are Guy James Show Yorkies. They don't like these fans running that are drying out the carpet in the anteroom of the studio and all that from the neighbor's water main breaking. But anyway, they're getting used to it, and so am I. It's going to be a while. They're going to be pounding. I don't know what we'll do when next door, hopefully won't be able to hear it. The next building that's hooked onto this building, they're going to have to replace all the walls and all that inside. So I don't know whether we'll hear their hammering or what. We'll see. We'll find out. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program. If you'd like to talk about the news of the day, we'll be happy to do that. I guess we're going to have to talk about the never-ending saga of Randy Rhoads. I'm sure most of you know that by now. Maybe you don't. Charlie Kirker, chairman, and Mark Green, president for Air America, released the following statement. Last week, Air America suspended Randy Rhoads for abusive, obscene language at a recent public appearance in San Francisco, which was sponsored by an Air American affiliate station. Air America Media was informed last night by Ms. Rhodes that she's chosen to terminate her employment with the company. We wish her well and thank her for past services to Air America. Rather brief statement. Reports surfaced yesterday that Rhodes was leaving the network, possibly to join KKGN in San Francisco. That's from a report on Radio and Records, and who knows all about it. I don't know. According to John Scott of Clear Channel, KKGN San Francisco, suspended talker Randy Rhodes and Air America Network have parted company as of Wednesday, April the 9th. And in a posting on the station website, Scott says that on Monday, April 14th, quote, it'll be our pleasure to announce the return of Randy Rhodes to the Green 960 family. I guess that's I don't know much about that affiliate out there. So, and so we gleaned some comments off the web. In fact, several people have sent me some comments on the web. And well, let's see. One of them here says, "Well, at least she'll have more time to walk her dog." Here's one. This one says, "I'll bet the Prozac scripts for the Air America listeners will drop by at least half. God, she was depressing." This one says, "Randy Rhodes was never as funny as she thought she was." Let's see, here's another one. "Amazing. This woman self-destructs over whom? A Republican? No. A Democrat? A member of her own team? The woman, for all her whining on and on, forgot who she was standing against and tried to take one of her own down. I don't call that fearless. I call it clueless. Pretty idiotic." Let's see what else we got here. "She's an idiot. At times, nothing more than Ann Coulter on the left. She says things that are unintelligent and ridiculous. Glad she's off Air America." And blah, 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 blah. We got some. "Maybe it was the booze talking again. Remember her being attacked in that incident a few months back. Did anyone ever hear a rational explanation of that?" Here's one says, "I liked her. I won't listen to AAR anymore." Here's another says, "She was my very favorite. I don't know what I'll do." Here one says, "Why doesn't Air America get rid of Ed Schultz?" Well, so you see, Ed Schultz isn't with Air America. And this in from the New York Times, this on the media section of the New York Times today: "The leader of progressive liberal radio is now the head-on radio network, with its outstanding lineup of talk show hosts Bob Kincaid, Mark Levine, John Fox, Peter Godbold, Dr. Bill, and Guy James. This group of progressive liberal talk show hosts is unmatched on the left or the right." Well, okay, I made that last part up. I was doing good till then, though, wasn't I? All right. Just having a little fun with you. That wasn't in the New York Times, but I thought it was. I don't know. I dreamed it was, maybe. I'm not sure exactly. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to join the program today. Where are we at here? I got an email a while ago from a listener who was listening to the program yesterday using his wireless laptop card from O'Hare Airport. He's holding an American Airlines ticket and has been at the airport since 7 a.m. yesterday morning and still doesn't know when he'll get out of there. He's on standby along with half of the rest of the people at O'Hare. Oh, man. Good luck, Aaron. Good luck with that one. Man, oh, man, oh, man. What was it, 1,000 flights canceled? And I see Delta's going to raise their prices if they're not high enough already. Wow. Wow. Let's see. What else? I meant to talk about this yesterday, and I forgot. I'm so scatterbrained this week. I don't know what's come over me. I know a lot of you are saying you're scatterbrained all the time, but I have a particularly bad case of it this week. I meant to talk yesterday, and we ran out of time. I don't know where the time went yesterday. But I meant to talk about Bush, and some of you are going to think I'm terrible for saying this. I meant to talk about Bush and that Medal of Honor ceremony. I'm sorry. I think I'm pretty good at spotting a phony when I see one. In a Weekly Standard column published today, conservative columnist William Kristol revealed that President Bush invited him over to the White House to preview the Iraq speech that he was giving today. Kristol breaks the rules of journalistic ethics in order to emphasize Bush's grieving during Tuesday's Medal of Honor ceremony and paint a picture of the president. He said, this is Kristol talking, "I'll violate the off-the-record rules in order to convey the tenor of the president's lengthy response." He explained how difficult it had been for him to keep his composure, and he had a certain amount of steel in his voice when he then reiterated his determination not to allow the sacrifices of our fighting men and women to have been made in vain. End quote. Now, I'll give Junior Bush the benefit of the doubt and possibly allow that he may well have become genuinely emotional at that ceremony. After all, when you've given orders to over 4,000 of our young men and women that got them killed, it would be hard to refrain from getting emotional over it, at least for most people. I do suspect that there are people within this administration that have no emotion regarding the death of these 4,000 people. Can you say Dick Cheney? People maybe no longer in the administration, Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Pearl, Douglas Feith, people like that, and more that we'll mention a little later on in the program today. But my main problem with the whole deal that Kristol describes is the timing. And I thought it was obscene. Isn't it just odd that this brave soldier who died to save his compadres and received the Medal of Honor, and rightly so, isn't it just odd that he was killed a year and a half ago and they just happened to give his family the Medal of Honor while General Petraeus is here touting the war effort? I think that's quite a coincidence. I think it's way more than a coincidence. And I see Prime Minister Maliki in Iraq doesn't agree with Petraeus. He doesn't agree with George Bush. We all watch Petraeus in these hearings telling us how they're going to suspend the withdrawal or the scaling down or whatever you want to call it. The pause. Isn't it cute, the nomenclature these people use? Isn't it something, the way they play with words? And they talked about Bill Clinton saying it depends what the meaning of the word is. Well, these people have gone above and beyond that. These people play with words when it really matters. But Bush has decided to pause any sort of partial withdrawal. Why don't they just say what it is? Bush has decided to put a stop to bringing our troops home. Bush has decided that when we get to a level about 10,000 above what it was before the surge, that he's going to put a stop to it. It's not a pause, it's a stop. It's beyond where they were before the escalation of this war began. And combined with the policy mentioned earlier today, the sum of this is that they've left open the possibility that about 140,000 U.S. servicemen and women will still be in the war zone when the next president takes office. The possibility, I think it's a probability, I think it's probably absolute, that 140,000 U.S. servicemen and women will still be in this war zone when the next president takes office. That is, minus the ones that get killed between now and then. And Petraeus and Bush agree on this. There's just one problem. Today, the Associated Press reports that Prime Minister Maliki disagrees with this pause. Maliki says he disagrees with that decision. The Prime Minister told Bush during a 20-minute telephone conversation on Wednesday that Iraqi security forces are capable of carrying out their duties and U.S. troops should be pulled out as the situation permits. This, according to a senior government advisor who sat in on the phone conversation. He spoke on condition of anonymity because he was not authorized to disclose the confidential details. Well, as it turns out, Bush actually agrees with Maliki. Doesn't he? Last month, Bush said the Iraqi government's offensive against Shiite militias in the southern city of Basra, to quote Bush, shows the progress the Iraqi security forces have made during the surge, end quote. And here's the kicker, and I know you all remember this. Moreover, Bush has also said that if Maliki wants U.S. troops to leave Iraq, then, to quote Bush, we would leave, end quote. Those are the words of Junior Bush. If Maliki wants us to leave, we will leave, and we have Maliki saying he wants us to leave. Let me quote Junior Bush. He said, we're there at the invitation of the Iraqi government. This is a sovereign nation. 12 million people went to the polls to approve a constitution. It's their government's choice. If they were to say leave, we would leave. We are there at their request, but if they were to make the request, we wouldn't be there. End quote. That is from our esteemed chief executive. I don't know if I ever have used the word president along with his name. I have been remiss in doing so, I guess, but there's something in my brain that just won't allow me to do it. All along, Bush has consistently expressed confidence in Maliki's leadership and his judgment. Just recently, you'll remember Junior Bush saying that Maliki had the strength of his character, that he's a strong leader, and that he's a good guy with deep determination. Those are the words of Junior Bush. My question is, if Bush has so much confidence in Maliki's character and his leadership abilities, that maybe he should take his advice and get our troops out of Iraq. Wouldn't that be right and proper? I think so. And have you ever heard anybody talk in circles better than this? They're masters at it. Absolutely masters at it. A senior administration official, speaking on conditions of anonymity, said the administration had abandoned the benchmarks as a strict standard of progress because establishing a secure Iraq would also depend on factors, and this is the part that slays me, it would depend on factors other than political and military progress. What other factors have we been led to believe that we were dependent upon to get out of Iraq other than political factors and military progress? What other factors have been mentioned by this administration, I ask you? Anything? What is it? It wasn't mentioned during Petraeus' testimony, and the ambassador didn't mention anything. Over 2 days of testimony, Petraeus repeatedly was asked to explain the conditions that would allow further withdrawals. And then he answered that they were not based on some easily defined measurements. Not based on some easily defined measurements? And so when pressed for an elaboration on the subject, the senior administration official said it's a very hard concept to explain publicly because it doesn't feature a sort of setting of the dial. It features what we call a running assessment. Have you ever heard more bullshit than that? That's pure bullshit. It's a very hard concept to explain publicly. You see, because we, the public, are all stupid in their minds. We went along with their dog and pony show getting into this war. Many of us did. Count me out of that group. When Bush said there were WMDs on every corner in Iraq, most of the American public believed it. When Bush said that Saddam Hussein was going to attack this country with drone planes and nukes, most of the public believed it. When Bush insinuated, and Cheney insinuated, and half of their administration insinuated that the perpetrators of 9/11 were from Iraq, most of the American public believed it. Because they knew most of the American public had the attitude, let's get revenge, let's get somebody, let's get anybody. And they knew how to channel that American vengeance, that thirst for vengeance, towards somebody that they had planned on getting rid of a long time before 9/11. Doesn't take a genius to figure that out. But I'm fascinated by the nomenclature in these statements out of the Bush administration. It's a very hard concept to explain publicly because it doesn't feature a sort of setting of the dial. It features what we call a running assessment. Do you know what that means? It means, and let me break it down for you in very simple terms, it means we're going to do what we want, when we want, however we want it, for as long as we want to do it, and we don't give a damn what you, the American public, think about it. That's what that says when you read between the lines. We are not going to give you a reason. We are not going to give you the end game of when we're going to get out of Iraq. We don't intend to tell you. We've never told you, and we're never going to tell you. Until we are safely out of the White House. Until Junior Bush is gone and down in that hellhole called Crawford, Texas, and until they start to build his presidential library with God knows how many millions of dollars to keep his two comic books in. And let's be honest here, we've seen his intellect. It's hard to believe there's anything above a weekly reader going to be in that library that he actually read. And I don't mean that as any kind of a slam against the man, because it just seems to be the natural truth, doesn't it? When I see that man speak, and I have mentioned many times on this program that I was more than willing to give him the benefit of the doubt back in 2000 after that whole dust-up was over with. I was willing to sit and say, all right, there's nothing I can do about it. The man is in the Oval Office. I have to accept this, and I hope he does a good job. I knew that I was hoping against hope, But I had hoped he would do a good job in running this country. Oh, my God. I had no idea. I had no idea he was as stupid as he is. And believe me, I had no idea he was even a smidgen of absolutely immoral as he is. I think we all knew that Cheney was a man totally lacking in ethics and morals, completely absent of those qualities, of those human qualities. I think we all knew that. But I, for one, have been very unpleasantly surprised that our president, this Junior Bush, has turned out to be a fantastic liar. An unbelievable liar. And we're going to talk about that today, because we're going to talk in a little while about this ABC News story mentioning how the top Bush advisors approved the enhanced interrogation, about how the detailed discussions were held about the techniques to use on the Al-Qaeda suspects. We're going to talk about that today, and I hope you'll join that conversation, because I am frankly incensed over this report. I am probably more angry at this administration than I have ever been today. I feel that there's a group of people in the White House, you know, in the old executive office building, and in the State Department, and a couple that have gotten out of the administration that should be wearing prison stripes, and I hope they do somehow, some way, someday, because they most assuredly deserve it. We will talk about this coming up after the break.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Tune in to Fox Top this Thursday, midnight Eastern, for part 5 of Lenin on Lenin, Blame It on Bermuda, where we'll listen in on the making of Beautiful Boy and Woman.
It suddenly dawned on me about the woman thing. I was in Bermuda again, and it suddenly sort of hit me about what women represent to us, not as the sex object or the mother, but just their contribution. That's why you hear me muttering at the beginning for the other half of the sky, which is Chairman Mao's famous statement.
So be there this Thursday, midnight Eastern, on Foxed Up for part 5 of Lenin on Lenin, Blame It on Bermuda. This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
All this month at Cheney's, it's the War Fest Breakfast. A delicious combo of Cheney's favorites, including 3 strips of sizzling Guantanamo bacon, 2 eggs served sunny side up yours, hash brown shirts fried to Aryan perfection, oil-drenched terrorist links, and you won't need a warrant for these waffles. So come with an appetite for weapons of mass destruction and leave quagmired in satisfaction. Eat at Cheney's. Don't torture yourself.
Baby, will you eat that there snack cracker in your special outfit for me, please?
Yogi Berra!
And we're back, and you are too, if you're listening. Have you heard me say that? Hey, thanks for joining us here on the Guy James Show today. Awfully glad to have you along with us. I want to get into a serious subject, and I hope you'll join me in the discussion at 866-546-5254. And I think this is the most serious subject that we've come up with since the day the war started. Since the illegal invasion of the sovereign country of Iraq. And I'm talking about this ABC report about how we find out now. And let's just go over this report. In dozens of top secret talks and meetings in the White House, the most senior Bush administration officials, let me reiterate, the most senior Bush administration officials discussed and approved specific details of how high-value Al-Qaeda suspects would be interrogated by the CIA. The so-called principals who participated in the meetings also approved the use of combined interrogation techniques, using different techniques during interrogations instead of using one method at a time, using these techniques on terrorist suspects who proved difficult to break, sources said. Highly placed sources said a handful of top advisors signed off on how the CIA would interrogate top Al-Qaeda suspects, whether they would be slapped, pushed, deprived of sleep, or subjected to simulated drowning called waterboarding. The high-level discussions about these enhanced interrogation techniques, I love again how they play with the English language, enhanced interrogation techniques, let's call it what it is, torture methods. The discussions were so detailed, these sources said, some of the interrogation sessions were almost choreographed, down to the number of times CIA agents could use a specific tactic. I'm finding out now why a gentleman that lives probably 3 miles away from me as the crow flies, I think he still lives there, one Mr. Porter Goss, has remained absolutely silent since he left the CIA. Absolutely silent. These advisors who signed off on this, and pay close attention to this, were members of the National Security Council's what they call the Principals Committee, a select group of senior officials who met frequently to advise President Bush on issues of national security policy. At the time, and this is the meat of this, at the time, the Principals Committee included Vice President Cheney, former National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, and Secretary of State Colin Powell, as well as CIA Director George Tenet and Attorney General John Ashcroft. As the National Security Advisor, Rice chaired the meetings, which took place in the White House Situation Room and were typically attended by most of the principals or their deputies. Condoleezza Rice chaired the meetings where these enhanced interrogation techniques, in other words, torture methods, were decided upon and okayed and signed off on. Condoleezza Rice, a woman who's being talked about as for being the vice presidential candidate along with John McCain. The Secretary of State, who's been absent from her job as Secretary of State, has done nothing in the way of diplomacy. Nothing. Chaired the meetings where they decided which torture techniques were to be used on these people. Along with Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Colin Powell, George Tenet, and John Ashcroft. I'm repulsed by this. I believe any American should be repulsed by this. I feel dirty even talking about it. Contacted by ABC News, spokesman for Tenet, Rumsfeld, and Powell declined to comment about the interrogation program or their private discussions in the principals' meetings. Of course, Colin Powell said that through one of his assistants that there were hundreds of principal meetings on a wide variety of topics, and he was not at liberty to discuss private meetings. I should think not. Don't think I would have wanted to discuss them if I were sat in on that either, would you? Maybe in some pissant third world country run by a dictator, maybe you'd sit in on a meeting like that and talk about it later. Maybe if you sat in on a meeting with Joseph Stalin's people or Adolf's people back when and discussed such subjects, you would be at liberty to talk about it later. And you wouldn't feel bad about it, because that's the way things have been done in those places. But it's never been what has been done in this country up till now, not as a matter of policy. To be sure, there have been rogues and renegades do things in our military that should never have been done. Lieutenant William Calhey, for example. But not as a matter of policy and procedure of the United States military sanctioned by the White House. The White House also declined comment on behalf of Rice and Cheney, and John Ashcroft could not be reached for comment today. As you all know, this interrogation program has met with a lot of resistance and discussion by the Congress and everybody else, by decent citizens around this country. We now find that they crossed over the line of international law, that they did condone torture. And yet Bush and his people, all along, have said it is legal, because they said so. And it is not torture. And Bush himself said in his speech that was widely reported and lauded as a great speech back in 2006, I believe it was September when he gave it, he said, "I can say that questioning the detainees in this program has given the given us information that has saved innocent lives by helping us stop new attacks here in the United States and across the world." And Tenet said it was authorized, it was legal, according to the Attorney General of the United States. But this is the first time sources have disclosed that a handful of the most senior advisors in the White House explicitly approved the details of this program. According to multiple sources, it was members of this principal's committee that not only discussed specific plans and specific interrogation methods, but approved them. Now, the humiliating part for the American people is, and the part that's most galling to me is, that Bush got up and gave a speech and defended this by talking about how we had gleaned information from these people using these enhanced interrogation methods.
and how we had gained information that had saved American lives. Oh, yes, maybe you don't like what we've done, but we've saved American lives by doing this. And Bush got up and bragged about this. And you remember him getting up and speaking in specifically about a man named Abu Zubaydah. And the facts about Zubaydah are that the CIA captured him in the spring of 2002 in Pakistan. He was in a safe house, and it was raided by Pakistani security forces along with FBI and CIA. And he was shot during that gun battle. And everybody had been running helter-skelter all around this country. So, oh my God, we're going to get attacked again any day now. They offered bounties for the Pakistani people, and they offered bounties for the Afghani people to turn in their neighbor if they thought they were suspected of terrorist activities. And as we know, many innocent people were rounded up by these the CIA and the FBI and these armies because of these bounties. The prisons were filled with people who were innocent. And some guilty, too, to be perfectly honest about this. Not everybody in those prisons is innocent. But Bush got up and he justified all this by giving this talk about Abu Zubaydah and about how when they use these enhanced interrogation techniques on him, that he just spilled the beans. And he just told them everything. He told them this and he told them that and he said, it was amazing the information they got out of him then. Oh, yes. After using these interrogation techniques. In other words, after torturing him. He said they were going to attack shopping centers and they were going to attack this and airports. And it was amazing the information they got from him. There was just one problem with Bush using this as an example of why it was justifiable to use these methods. Bush was lying. He was blatantly lying about this entire situation of Zubaydah. Ron Suskind wrote an article about it that's very telling. And he spoke in it about how the White House had identified Zubaydah as Al-Qaeda's chief operations, chief of operations. The fact is, after all the bragging that Bush did, that how they'd saved countless lives by using these enhanced interrogation methods, turns out that Zubaydah was mentally ill. We were torturing a man who was, in effect, retarded. Zubaydah, his captors discovered, turned out to be mentally ill and nothing like the pivotal figure they supposed him to be. The CIA and the FBI analyst pored over a diary he kept for more than a decade, and they found entries in the voice of three people. Hani 1, Hani 2, and Hani 3 were the names of the three people in his diary that he kept. A boy, a young man, and a middle-aged alter ego. And these records were kept in absolute detail. What they ate or wore are just trifling things. And this is according to Dan Coleman, then the FBI's top Al-Qaeda analyst. So this guy is insane. He's certifiable. He has a split personality. And Zubaydah appeared to know nothing about terrorist operations. Rather, he was the Al-Qaeda's go-to guy for minor logistics, travel for the wives and the children and the like. That judgment wasn't just a judgment of the FBI. It was echoed at the top of the CIA and was, of course, briefed to the president and the vice president. Cheney and Bush knew this guy was giving them information that wasn't worth a tinker's damn. They knew it. They knew he was insane. They knew he had a certifiable split personality. They knew it. And yet, in his speech that he gave a couple of weeks later, Bush gets up and tells the American people that Abu Zubaydah was one of the top operatives plotting and planning death and destruction in the United States. At one of their meetings, Bush told George Tenet, whom he paid off by giving him the Medal of Freedom, to keep his mouth shut, it appears to me. Bush said, "I said he was important," he told Tenet. "You're not going to let me lose face on this, are you?" "No, sir, Mr. President," Tenet replied. Bush was fixated on how to get Zubaydah to tell the truth. And he asked one briefer, Do some of these harsh methods really work? Well, the interrogators did their best to find out. They strapped Zubaydah to a waterboard, which, as you all know, reproduces the agony of drowning. They threatened him with certain death. They withheld his medication. They bombarded him with deafening noise and lights, deprived him of sleep. And under duress, this man, whom the FBI and the CIA knew was insane, had a split personality. He began to talk about plots of every kind that you imagine, against shopping malls and banks and supermarkets and our water system, our nuclear plants, apartment buildings, the Brooklyn Bridge, the Statue of Liberty. And every time he would tell one of these stories, thousands of uniformed men and women went into a panic to each of these targets. So here we were, getting the okay to torture this man from the highest levels of our government, where they knew he was insane, where it should have been patently obvious that anything coming out of his mouth was suspect or not worth even action, not actionable at all. And yet the President of the United States got up and told us how he had saved American lives by torturing Abu Zubaydah. He lied. He lied blatantly. He had hoped Americans wouldn't know the difference. And the main part of his speech was absolutely false. And to my way of thinking, this whole episode is absolutely unforgivable. This is a story that should cause this man to be removed from the White House. This is a story that should cause Dick Cheney to be removed from the old executive office building. And probably caused the arrest of Tenet and Colin Powell and Donald Rumsfeld. And maybe most of all, Condoleezza Rice. Here's a woman being considered to be a candidate for the vice presidency along with John McCain. Here's a woman highly regarded within the conservative community. Being considered for that office when she got up and said that this was fine. And let me read you the most chilling part of this at all, of all. According to top officials, Ashcroft asked aloud after one meeting, "Why are we talking about this in the White House? History is not going to judge this kindly." And then National Security Advisor Rice, sources said, was decisive. Despite growing policy concerns shared by Powell that the program was harming the image of the United States abroad, sources said she did not back down, telling the CIA, quote, "This is your baby. Go do it." End quote. Is this a woman that should have any place in the government of the United States of America? Are any of these people involved in this policy committee people that deserve to even live in this country, let alone be a part of this government? And you know what makes this story all the worse? The part of this that is absolutely sickening. It's not bad enough that they torture a guy that's insane. And don't get me wrong here. The guy wasn't entirely innocent. He wasn't some Bo Peep someplace. But they knew they weren't getting valuable information for him. And the crux of the matter is they were willing to jeopardize the reputation of the United States so that they could brag in a speech by the President of the United States that they were saving lives. But no one has ever mentioned, no one on that policy committee has mentioned, and you don't hear Junior Bush mentioning, you don't hear anybody mentioning the names of Maher Arar, Khalid al-Masari, Bishr al-Rawi, and Muhammad Ahmed Bashmila. These are men who were renditioned by the CIA, who were tortured by the CIA for information they never had, because these are men who were proven to be innocent. This is your baby. Go do it. Said Condoleezza Rice. And I've just mentioned the name of four men who were renditioned and tortured by the government of the United States of America. Their names don't get mentioned. And how many more? How many more that we don't know about were tortured as well? Leaving aside the lack of humanity and all that, what has that done to the reputation of the United States of America? What has it done? It makes me so ashamed. It makes me so very ashamed. Should make every American ashamed. There's no way you can defend any of that. You know, we've seen these protests going on the past few days over the Olympics being held in China. And personally, I'm sympathetic with the Tibetan people because of the Chinese government's human rights violations against them. But I'd like to see politics kept out of the Olympics. So you might think that the least we can do is get together every 4 years and play some games without having to fight about it. But I also have some very ambivalent feelings about it. I have no doubt that we in the United States have a far better record than the Chinese do on human rights. But I also have to consider the violations committed by the Bush administration. And that crime of it is, we know it's the official policy of the United States to engage in torture. It's officially sanctioned by the Bush administration, and they have used torture when they've wanted to without regard to our own law and without regard to international law, the Geneva Convention. And as Americans, we have to realize that people in other countries are looking at the U.S. and asking, what right do we have to protest against the human rights violations of another country? And personally, I am deeply ashamed of our own policies. And I never thought until the last few years that I'd be making comments about my own country engaging in such horrible, unthinkable practices with the blessing of our government. I never dreamed I would be doing so. That's the disgusting part of this. We cannot talk about the human rights violations about other countries. We have no right as a country to talk about human rights violations in China at all. Clean up our own house first. I'm absolutely ashamed of this report. No surprises in it, other than the fact that we now know that Condi Rice told the CIA, this is your baby, go do it. I am most definitely repulsed by that. I hope you are as well. I've been working on this for a long time, and I know ABC has been working on it for a long time, and I know various reporters have worked on this whole thing for a long, long time. And I think sometimes when you're putting a story together, something that you want to talk about, you kind of hope, well, when I get down to the end of this, I'll find that it's not true, and I'll be able to say, well, you know, we didn't do so bad there after all. Maybe it's just all malarkey, and we'll be able to say, never mind. But in this case, it's something that every American should know all about. Every American should feel very ashamed of it. And I know there are right-wingers listening to this program right now. I can think of a couple in particular that will email me and say, oh, hell, we ain't ashamed of that. We're going to kick their asses. We need to torture every one of them ragheads. That's what I'll hear from some of these people. Mark my word, you know that. That's the mindset of many on the right. That's the mindset of the neocons. Power, force, whatever it takes to get our way. Right or wrong. You know, it used to be the old thing, America, when she's right, great, and when she's wrong, I'll make her right again, but somehow people are forgetting some of that. We're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Hit On Radio Network. I hope you'll join us in the next hour. We'll be right back after the news. Don't go away.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. In a surprise move on Wednesday, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi rejected White House pressure to vote on the Colombian free trade deal within 90 days. Instead, the speaker tied up the deal. The AFL-CIO agrees with Speaker Pelosi's actions. The Federation says Congress must keep a hard focus on the economic crisis facing America's working families. The AFL-CIO applauds Pelosi's assertion of congressional control over trade. Bush sent the Colombian free trade deal to Congress despite Pelosi urging him not to. AFL-CIO and other labor groups oppose the Colombian free trade deal because deals like it have been so destructive to U.S. jobs and workers. Colombia also leads the world in the killing of union activists and leaders, with the latest torture murder happening just this month. Helmets to Hard Hats is a union program helping veterans get into skilled construction trades. Jean Natasha Zoe is one of the few women in the program. Zoe says Helmets to Hard Hats allows vets to interview with unions to find the right trade.
I love the fact that the unions are patriotic and support their vets. This is just one of many ways that the unions honor the vets and the sacrifice that they make for their country.
Zoe is retired from the Marine Corps and is getting her Helmets to Hard Hats training in New York City. Indian workers in the United States who believe they're victims of human trafficking and modern-day slavery take their case to the United Nations.
Jesse Russell reports.
At the end of March, the Indian workers who were brought to the United States to work in the shipyards for oil rig manufacturer Signal International marched from the Gulf Coast to Washington, D.C. They met with the Indian ambassador to the United States and left dissatisfied with his response. The next plan? On Tuesday, the workers met with United Nations High Commission for Human Rights Deputy Director Greg Mockhabir, explaining that they have been forced into slave-like conditions and have filed a class-action lawsuit against Signal. When the 100 workers are involved in the protest, while the company employs more than 500 Indian workers. The protesting workers now plan to split their efforts, with some workers staying in New York City and the others focusing their energy on Washington, D.C. and Mississippi. Signal has denied the accusations and has since suspended recruiting operations in India. Here is today's economic report. What is the cost of obesity on employers? According to a new report from the Conference Board, obese employees cost U.S. companies $45 billion per year in medical coverage and loss of worker productivity. 34% of American adults are obese, double the rate 30 years ago. Obesity has led to an increase of 36% in healthcare spending. More than 40% of U.S. companies have obesity reduction programs. Jesse Russell.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Round up the usual suspects.
Hi, boys and girls. This is Rick Goodner, part of the Weekend Wrecking Crew. And I'm here to tell you that you cannot miss Billy Shears. The man knows his music. The man knows what you're thinking. Tune in and listen. You'll be surprised. He's going to play the very song that you were thinking that you needed to hear. Now, he's a genius. Maybe a bit psychic. I promise you. Tune in on the weekend, listen to Billy Shears Night Sounds, and you will hear the song you've been waiting to hear. And you'll enjoy your time as much as I do. Right here, on the Horn, Head On Radio Network. Make sure you don't miss what you've been waiting to hear with Billy Shear.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
As time goes by.
Throw the second switch! Throw the third switch!
Not the third switch!
Throw it, I say! Throw it!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation!
This was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Is there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Yes, I am a liberal Democrat and proud of it and shall remain so for the rest of my natural life. Not progressive, liberal. Okay, let's get that straight. Hey, MoveOn.org, an organization that I have issues with now and then. Sometimes they're okay and sometimes they're not. They've come out with a very fine new TV ad. And since I can't play a TV ad for you here, I'm going to give you my radio version of it, of the MoveOn.org new ad entitled, How Do You Stay at War for 100 Years? And the answer is 6 months at a time. February 7, 2003, Donald Rumsfeld. It could last 6 days, 6 weeks. I doubt 6 months. September 10, 2003, John McCain. The next 3 to 6 months will be critical. May 18, 2004, Junior Bush. Our efforts are approaching a crucial moment. December 4th, 2005. John McCain. We will probably see significant progress in the next 6 months to a year. November 12th, 2006. John McCain. We'll lose this thing or win this thing within the next several months. May 25th, 2007, Junior Bush. This summer is going to be a critical time for the new strategy. April 7th, 2008, General Petraeus is expected to call for halting troop reductions for 6 months. April 8th, 2008, John McCain, success is within reach. The Bush-McCain strategy. Endless war. All the installment plan. 6 months at a time. And that's how it is with these people. Every 6 months. Every 6 months. That's what we hear. I don't know. I get so tired of hearing it, and I know you do as well. Ugly. Ugly, ugly, ugly. What I wonder is, one of the things I wonder about all the time is the Republicans. I'm just amazed at how the Republicans, who are now doing backflips to protect John McCain, this guy that they wanted no part of. I mean, here's a guy they said was a liberal. Here's a guy that Limbaugh and Hannity wanted no part of. Here's the guy that caused Ann the Man Coulter to say she'd vote for Hillary Clinton. Listen to Joe Scarborough, another guy who didn't think much, you know, what he said, less jobs and more war about McCain. But now he's saying this.
Cause. A little bit of a rough spot with the Sunni Shiite thing again.
You know what the thing is? Everybody is obsessing on the fact that he keeps confusing Sunni and Shia. The fact is, I can start peppering people with questions about Sunnis and Shia and Kurds and the relationships there. And 99% of Americans wouldn't know. 99% of Americans wouldn't give a damn. The bottom line is, John McCain knows Iraq. John McCain's...
You know, Joe, 99% of Americans aren't wanting to be the president of the United States. And 99% of the Americans that don't know the Shias from the Kurds from the Sunnis aren't trying to be the leader of the free world, you idiot.
Been over to Iraq. If he keeps confusing Sunni and Shia, it's a block. You know, without
yeah, it's a block.
Have these like mind blocks. George Bush, it happens when he talks. Bill Clinton,
yeah,
it happens whenever he has to make personal judgments.
Yeah, Bill Clinton made gaps like that all the time. Bill Clinton didn't know the difference in Bosnia. He didn't know the difference between the Sunnis and the Kurds and the Shias. He did. Yeah, right. Who are you trying to convince?
Everybody's got their thing.
You know what? I'm sorry. That's ridiculous.
ridiculous indeed. 99% of the American people may not know the difference between the Shias and the Kurds and the Sunnis and their relationship with one another. They may well not know that. But as I said, 99% of the people aren't wanting to make our foreign policy based on their knowledge of that. With 300 million American lives at stake, what a fool would say a thing like that. Scarborough has no credibility. He has no credibility whatsoever. None. And speaking of credibility, here's a man who's never had any credibility, in my opinion, Mr. Newt Gingrich.
Let me give you an example, Alan, of the stunning bias of the American news media. 15,000 Iraqi troops went into Basra. 1,000 of them didn't fight very well. 14,000 of them fought very well, and in fact were defeating the militias. Guess what the report essentially was in the elite news media? It was the 1,000 that didn't fight very well. And the 14,000 that were risking their lives on behalf of their own country without American forces present didn't get very much credit. I think we're, in fact, slowly, steadily winning this war. I think it is a hard war, and it is sad to see some politicians who are eager to legislate an American defeat if they can.
Legislated American defeat. Now, Nudie boy, Mr. Morality himself, you're wrong, wrong, and wrong again. I would say that if 15,000 people go into battle and 1,000 of them desert and refuse to fight, I would say that is one hell of a big deal. I would say that is more than newsworthy. I would say that any press person in the world would immediately latch onto that and make it a story, because if 1,000 people deserted out of 15,000 or would not fight, that's a huge story. And then Mr. Gingrich goes on to say, and they were winning decisively, I believe were his words. It's absolutely false. We now know that Maliki sent an emissary to Iran to talk al-Sadr into laying down his arms or stopping the fighting so that Maliki's government wouldn't end up being embarrassed. Probably was a good thing for both sides. But here we have Newt Gingrich. Oh, they were very successful. Gee, that's not what General Petraeus said. General Petraeus said that the performance was disappointing. Now, didn't he? I think, as far as battles go, he's probably in a better position to know than Newt Gingrich, don't you think? I think so. Man, I'll tell you, I see the likes of Newt Gingrich up there, and I see people, you know, still mentioning him. Oh, I wish Newt Gingrich would have run for president. Those are the suckers talking. I mean, when you stop and think about it, the old adage is true. There's only two kinds of Republicans. There's millionaires and there's suckers. And so if you're a millionaire, I can understand your reasoning for being a Republican. Your greed, your selfishness, and looking out for good old number one and no one else. That's all self-explanatory. So I understand that. I don't have to delve into your mind to understand that. But the rest of the Republicans, it absolutely boggles my mind. Really. It really does. You know, just offhand, do you know the names of the three presidents who presided over the greatest economic growth in our country's history? You know who those three are? Their names? Their names are Clinton, Johnson, and Kennedy. Do you know the names of the three presidents who have racked up over 70% of our current national debt? Namely, Bush 1, Bush 2, and St. Ronald of Reagan. Taxes. Republicans love to talk taxes. You want to talk taxes? How much taxes do you suppose we pay on the national debt that those three clowns ran up on us? You talk about wasted money. You talk about raising taxes. How much of our taxes are going to pay the national debt? You know, we had Junior Bush with the audacity to blame Clinton for the $35 barrel of oil when he was running for office. And you remember, you all remember him bragging about being your first NBA president and how he and Cheney had influence with the OFEC people. They were friends. And they'd be able to cajole them to keep their energy prices low. That worked out really well now, didn't it? We had our oil at $112 a barrel yesterday. Gas at $3 and what, 56 cents a gallon here? How's that for extra taxes? Call it what you will. Money out of your pocket. Where did oil end up today? 110.11 oil ended up today. What do we got here? We got gold at 931. And I think the market was up just a little bit today. It was up 54 points. So everybody made a fortune today on the market. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Yeah, hi, Guy. How you doing? This is Rama from up in Vermont.
Hey.
Hey, listen, you know, this bit with McCain not being able to tell the difference between Shiite and Sunni, I mean, despite the supposed big, great education we've gotten in the last 7 or 8 years here, it's not so... It's curious, and I would make the argument that the reason he makes the mistake isn't because he's not intelligent enough to know the difference. The difference is immaterial to McCain and like-minded folks. Their goal has nothing to do with Shiites or Sunni. It has to do, literally, with military domination of a particular part of the world. So to them, the facts have very little to do with it, and they're kind of irrelevant in the long run because they're just trying to lay out the storyline for why we should follow them. Do you remember, this was quite a few years ago already now, and it's kind of, God, it's a horrible thought that we've had the Bush administration this long, but do you remember the werewolves of Germany that they were feeding us?
Sure.
Do you know where Condi Rice and Donald Rumsfeld and all, they got that story from?
No.
It came from a tongue-in-cheek op-ed piece that Fox News put up on their website. Now, Fox News didn't run it as a serious piece. Fox News ran it as a tongue-in-cheek. It was meant to satirize what would happen if liberals were in charge at the end of World War II. And the guy who wrote the piece even went so far as to put, I believe it was Reuters, R-O-O-T-E-R-S, as the news service. And despite this fact, they went out, and these people, and this is literally where that storyline came from that they passed on us. It was a deliberately fictional piece that somebody had posted up as an op-ed piece. And they went out, Condoleezza Rice and Donald Rumsfeld and others went around telling us about the German werewolves and how much damage they did after World War II against the Allies and stuff. This despite the fact that the only documented case of the German werewolves as a group actually killing anybody was a German mayor who got killed at that time still on the German side of the German lines prior to the surrender.
Wow.
So I bring this up simply to point out what I think is a very salient point in all this. To people like McCain, the facts themselves are kind of secondary. If they happen to coincide with what the agenda is, which is to pursue war, then that's great. They'll use them, and they'll say, see, we know what we're talking about. But if the facts don't coincide, such as, you know, the Sunni, a radical right-wing Sunni ultra-religious group and Shia in Iran aren't going to get along together, if those facts don't coincide, that's irrelevant. It's more important to keep the storyline focused on where he wants to go. So McCain will go around, and he'll mix and match Sunni and Shia. And it's not because he's a stupid person. It certainly isn't because he's an honest person either. But it's because it's very irrelevant to his whole public argument about why we should be doing what we're doing. I mean,
The emphasis isn't on. I get you. I get where you're coming from with this. This is a good point. It's so irrelevant that it's easy to make the mistake because who cares? That's not what I'm getting at here.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, he could have thrown out the Catholic Church. And I mean, to him, it would have made no difference whatsoever.
Good point.
When we have these, and this is the problem, and I know I have, is, God, you know, it has been, we're in 2008. It has been a little over 7 years since we started with this Bush administration.
Mm.
And to tell you the truth, I could say the exact same things now, pretty much, that I was saying, that I could have said at the beginning when Bush first got sworn into office. There's been a few additions as to the immediate facts, such as a couple of wars, et cetera, torture and things like that. But by the same token, I got, you know, well, I not only could have, I know I was saying it to my friends that, you know, look, this guy Bush is a liar, and the Republicans have no good. They're going to pretend to do stuff for the economy. They're going to increase spending on military budgets. They're going to try to reduce spending on domestic, on other domestic issues, and we're going to be at war.
Well, I have to admit, I have to admit, and I have many times, I'm not surprised at the framework of it all, but I am surprised at the depth of it. I really am. I've been somewhat taken aback at the depth of it.
But, I think in another discussion is the fact that this is all built up from a lot of historical context. Nothing's being done in the name of terrorism that wasn't already being started in the name of Nixon's war on drugs. So I would say, it's kind of crept up on us. It's kind of like the frog in the water being slowly raised, the temperature raised. I mean, but by the time we reach this war on terrorism or terriers or whatever the hell it is, then,
yeah.
All of these tricks have already been used against you remember civil forfeiture. You remember why that came around? That was to go after the bigwigs, these great big criminal enterprises who were using their ill-gotten gains to defend themselves in court. And it didn't take long before they, you know, Joe Blow and Jane Blow off the street were losing cars and boats for little bits of marijuana found in there.
Saw one this morning. saw a new Mustang out on the road with the flashing cop lights on it. And
I think, though, as we go along, I guess the point I was trying to get at with that is I really get tired of trying to repeat the same things over and over because, sadly enough, the same things are happening. And if you try to talk to somebody about it, after a while they go, oh, you're just beating the same old drum. Well, when the same old drum is the reality, you keep beating on it, and it gets hard. But it's important because as we go along, it actually does. When somebody listens to you and they're thinking about what you're saying, and hopefully people go out and say, well, you know, I mean, does this guy really know what he's talking about? And my hope is when people hear me, that's what they say, is who's this Rama guy? He's just a dork, so I'm going to go double-check him. And that's the best outcome, because then they'll also go out and talk to their neighbors and friends. But it's important to bring the facts and the reality back, because the facts and reality do really count. They just don't count in these political storylines that we're hearing.
Oh, that's absolutely true. I tried to make the point yesterday that I'm so disappointed in the media right now that the storylines they bring us, it seems their list of priorities are so mixed up right now. And it's all about, evidently, you know, it's been talked about that it's all about profit for the news companies, and evidently that's absolutely true, because it just couldn't be that responsible news people would bring us the news that they're bringing us now on purpose.
God, no. Well, they are bringing us what they're bringing us on purpose. That's the sad part about it. But, I don't know. It's tough, but it's up to everybody, not just you or me or people in the chat room. It's up to all of us to keep talking to each other about what the reality is. Because, you know, it was even like, and by the way, I'm not going to just get on the Republicans about this. This is a Democratic major flaw. When I would turn on and listen to some of the hearings, Petraeus and the ambassador, whatever his name is, I listened for a while, and I listened through some Democrats, and I listened through some Republicans, and you know what nobody talked about? Nobody talked about Iraqis. Everything started, and literally, it started with, oh, poor us, look at what we're sacrificing, and then it all ended with, oh, poor us, look at what we're sacrificing, And in between was, oh, General Petraeus and Ambassador, whatever your face is, you're just such great patriotic men. And,
yes.
You know, and I'm sorry, we didn't invade the United States. Nixon started the invasion of the United States with the drug war. We invaded Iraq. We're dropping bombs in Iraq. We've hired private militias to go in and just shoot Iraq up pretty much at will. We've hired Iraqi militias to stand by us, but we don't call them militias. We call them concerned citizens groups. We've armed and clothed two major Iraqi militias. One is the group that comes with Hakim's political party, SCIRI, and the other that came with the Maliki political party,
yep.
His Dawa party. And then we turn around and we say, well, it's the Iraqis going after extremists when they went into Basra, but who were they going after in Basra? They were going after other Iraqis. But
sure.
They were going after an Iraqi militia that wouldn't accept our clothing and our weaponry. And we have to keep an eye on the ball here because, you know, in both sides of this debate, especially when it comes to the war, neither side, Democrats or Republicans, are coming from a point of reality on all of this. And I hate to discourage people, but first of all, Clinton has no intention of pulling us out of Iraq, and neither does Obama, and he admits it. Once you get past his initial statement of we have to get out of Iraq, you realize, and he'll say it himself, he's talking about removing a good portion of what's there. He's still talking about, you know, something that could demand 40 or 60,000 troops left behind in Iraq. And even then, he's not talking about pulling our troops out of the Mideast. He's talking about putting them elsewhere. So, boy, guess what? They can jump right back in. You know, the difference between Obama and McCain, well, somewhere in between there is Hillary Clinton, and it's a very small difference. McCain is outright, and he says, yeah, we'll do a 100-year war. And Obama says, well, we won't do a 100-year war, but, boy, I'm going to leave us set up to do one. And so we need to not let their storylines destroy the facts.
But well, I Imran, I think you're exactly right. I said all along, while we were having the debates within the party, and when it got narrowed down to Hillary and Barack, I wanted to have a debate, and I wanted to go ask them one question. Of course, you know, that's fantasy land, but I wanted to ask one question, and I wanted to stay at it until I got the answer. Which one of you is going to raise your hand and swear to the American people and keep your promise that you will end this war in you know, close proximity to where we're at now in on the calendar as much as possible? I mean, let's get it down to realistic. Which one of you will swear to the American people, look us in the eye, and say they're going to do that? And of course, no one's ever pinned them down on that, and I would love to see it. All we have is, like you say, all we have is campaign rhetoric right now.
Well, they have all answered your question. They all have answered, but you just got to pay attention. McCain has answered. He has no intention of doing anything but keeping as many troops in Iraq as possible, and then we can move on to Iran as soon as possible.
Well, yeah, and let me change what I should have said. What I should say is, will you raise your hand and swear that you will do this and keep your promise?
But they won't, because it's in none of their agendas. It's in none of their agendas, because Iraq is not about what's good for the Iraqis or what's good for the Mideast. It's not even what's good for you and me.
No.
Iraq is about I don't know. Iraq is about using our military because it's there. And guess what? It's one of the greatest economic. It's a huge economic welfare.
It is.
Thing in this country.
It
I
is.
Mean, the official military budget will be over $500 billion a year. You throw in another couple, or $500 billion a year. Throw in another couple $100 billion for Iraq and Afghanistan for a year, and guess what? You're up to close to $750 billion. In 1 year, $750 billion just on military expenditures.
So, and as the old saying goes, pretty soon you're talking about real money.
Sooner or later we will. I mean, we don't have to worry. We'll just keep borrowing.
No, that's right.
It's free money. That money, you know, I'm expecting free money from the government pretty soon.
Oh, yeah. Won't be long. We'll all be...
It's free, though.
Yeah, that's right. Free. Absolutely free.
I told my daughter, though, she's got to pay it back, but screw her. I'm going to spend it. She's not getting it. It's mine now.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, absolutely.
But, she kind of gets pissed about that concept, but so what? She's still too young to do anything about it, though, ever. Yes. Well, thanks.
Hey, Rama, thanks so much for a really great call, and I appreciate it. Call us back anytime. Thank you.
Bye.
Great conversation. I enjoyed talking to him very, very much. A man that's got his head square, level-headed on his shoulders, that's for sure. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to join us in the conversation, 866-546-5254. And, I see someone's ringing in right now. Let's just take a moment. Let's go ahead and take this call. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hello, Juanita.
I totally agree with what both you and Bob were saying. And I just got an email from they're supposed to have some kind of a program on CNN this weekend, I believe. Have you heard about it with Barack and Hillary?
No, I haven't.
And they wanted me to vote on what question I would ask them about, and torture was among the subjects, and I voted for that.
Yeah, I'd
so
like
I
to.
Don't know what. Oh yeah, is our here it is. Is CNN on this Sunday? They will broadcast a deeper discussion with two of the candidates, and you can vote on what they're asked. And it says, click here to vote for a question that reflects your values. I don't know what time it's going to be, but it's from a place that's called Faithful America.
It's
a liberal Christian.
Okay, it's not going to be a debate. It's just going to be individual interviews with them. Is that it?
It's called Compassion Forum, sponsored by diverse religious leaders.
Okay. I hadn't heard about that.
Well, I hadn't either. I just got that while, you were talking. And I thought that was... 8 o'clock Eastern Time on CNN. Well, I don't get CNN anymore, but...
8 p.m., I would take it.
Yeah, but I think it'd be interesting. The choices are torture, domestic poverty, genocide, global AIDS, or climate change. Those are the choices.
Well, I'll have to check that out and find out what the deal is on that.
I think torture, is definitely number one. I think that what we've got in the White House tonight is nothing new. Is people that like that sort of stuff.
Evidently.
And they're just using it for an excuse.
I think you're right.
To do what they like to do, what they like to. Put people down,
because they're tough.
And I hope this will all come out. I mean, I didn't see the program, but I would like to. I would like to see all this come out and for the general public, because the general public doesn't have all this information.
No, they don't, and it's a shame. We have our little voice in the wilderness here, but it's a shame that the public doesn't have all the details on all this. That's what we strive for, but we've got a small megaphone to a large audience.
And you know about the beating down here of the girls did at school.
Yes. Oh yes.
And to me. I know it isn't probably the only cause, but I really believe what our leaders are doing. Why should kids do any different?
Well, you're to a point. You're right. When morality goes out the window, it doesn't help in the overall.
Why
picture.
Should they do any different?
Sure.
They're blaming it on what I heard. They're blaming it on the internet, but I blame it on the powers that be.
Yeah. Well. You either got some of that in you or you don't. And those girls, that's a terrible story, just to get a little publicity. But hey, Juanita, thanks for your call. Good to hear from you.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye. Bye.
I might even saw this press secretary, this Tony Fratto, he's the assistant to Perino, genius that she is. talking about how they felt about this Iraqi situation in the White House. I was amazed by this.
Also, how does this latest violence in Iraq and the latest uncertainty about what's going on color the Petraeus Crocker testimony this time around? I mean, it obviously has changed the equation. I mean, weeks ago, it looked like the surge was, you know, had this pretty rosy cast, and now with all this renewed violence, I think it has changed the dynamic. So how has this changed the equation?
I think we've thrown out all of the rose-colored glasses in how we look at Iraq and try to look at them through clear lenses as to what is actually going on in the country.
Do you think it takes any of the steam, though, out of what Petraeus and Crocker will be saying when you see those images?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's look, everyone, like I said, we threw out the rose-colored glasses. I think we have a very clear-eyed view of what's happening in Baghdad.
Oh, I see. I see. I get it now. You were looking through rose-colored glasses all along, and now you've seen the light. Yes, we can trust that. Rose-colored glasses. Absolutely amazing. We'll be back right after this break.
John McCain has done more than just embrace George Bush's failed policy in Iraq. It's actually his idea to escalate the war there. It's John McCain's idea to send tens of thousands more soldiers to Iraq and to keep them there with no timeline for bringing them home. The McCain plan to escalate, going from bad to worse.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year. And a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with those scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Simon Lai,
Oh, yeah, smooth operator. Welcome back to the show today. We're trying to be smooth operators today. We're glad to have you just conversing with some folks on the Head On Radio Network chat room, Monique and Sarge, about when I'm coming back to Phoenix again. Don't know. And I was mentioning the fact that I had some great food in Phoenix. I'm so bad at remembering the name of restaurants. There was one I ate on my birthday while I was out there. It was a big, fat Greek restaurant. Oh, man, was it good. What a great place. Don't know when I've had more fun eating than that, than there. Oh, man, that was good. And there's this little place outside of town. I can't remember. There's so many suburbs of Phoenix. I can't remember, but it was out in a little community out by itself, kind of. Away from the city, and they had this like a little village there. Is all I can say. They had separate buildings. One of them was a restaurant. One of them was a pool room. And anyway, outside they had little individual fireplaces. Like after you ate your meal, you could go out there and roast marshmallows and stuff. It was a like a Tex-Mex food type. Oh, it was just fantastic. Just fantastic. Loved it. And well, anyway, don't get me started. I'm hungry. And, yes, but Phoenix is a great place for a lot of good food. I can tell you that. I love Tex-Mex food and good barbecue. Ate at a really good barbecue place in another one of those suburbs, the old brick buildings, you know, downtown. All righty, then. I did want to mention today, I didn't want to go too far without talking about John McCain a little bit more today. That's going to be one of our main missions now, talking about John McCain a lot. And the mainstream media, and I've criticized them a lot about this lately, they've been remiss or possibly just plain negligent, and I think maybe that's the case. I hope it is. And not pointing out that John Sidney McCain is more like the junior Bush the public sees than Bush himself. And I really do mean that. You see, McCain was for the war and for the surge probably even before Bush himself was for it or knew he was for it. I mean, and since the very beginning of our immoral, ill-advised conflict in Iraq, John Sidney McCain has been the biggest cheerleader of them all. And one has the feeling that as president, he would tear down the State Department building and build another parking garage for the Pentagon. And diplomacy, obviously McCain has no room for it in his world opinion. He wanted a massive military presence of our military might to invade Iraq even before we went in. But despite not getting his wish with the numbers of troops, McCain stuck with Donald Rumsfeld. He didn't ask for Donald Rumsfeld to resign. Not at all. He constantly echoed Rumsfeld's positive assessment of the war, and he never missed an opportunity to talk about the great progress that the U.S. was making in Bush's misbegotten adventure into Persia. And who can forget McCain's comments from the market in central Baghdad proclaiming it was as safe as any market in the world. Remember that? Of course, his words came as there were hundreds of heavily armed American military personnel, along with private Blackwater mercenaries, a few helicopters flying overhead, and an Iraqi public, which had been searched and screened with metal detectors. It was quite a scene. It might as well have been a movie set. Yes, it was at that very moment very safe, because with that kind of force present, one could have been safe smack dab in the middle of the Battle of the Bulge, or maybe even Chickamauga, or the Battle of Bull Run, for that matter. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello?
This is Monique.
Hi, Monique. How are you?
I'm from Mesa, Arizona.
Ah, good old Mesa.
Yes, I love it here.
Oh, I bet you do. It's a wonderful community.
But I don't say that in July.
No. When it's 113 out, why, you know, pretty good to stay indoors.
I was just calling to know if you've read the article and heard about this new Democrat congresswoman who was newly elected and gave a fiery speech at the Congress today opposing the Iraq War. And when she gave it, she got booze from the Republicans, and some of the Republicans walked out.
Oh, No, I don't know anything about that. Has that happened since I've been on the show, evidently?
It happened this morning.
Oh.
And her name is Representative Jackie Speer. She's taking Tom Lantos' place.
Oh.
But the Democrats applauded her and the Republicans booed and they more or less walked out.
Did not know that.
And her daughter was in the gallery and said, "Why is my mommy getting booed?"
Well, you don't dare talk about the war to the against the war to the Republicans, and I might add a few of the Democrats as well.
Yep. She is totally against this war, and she wants to get out of it ASAP.
Well, that should be the goal for everybody to be pounding on that day in and day out. And Monique, isn't it something how the war's gotten pushed aside in the news?
Yes, it has. They don't even report anything about it.
No, it's as though it's just not happening at all right now. We've got the economy's bad. I mean, we all know that, and the politics going on and all that. But the war, that's the other side of the world, and my kid's not in it, and so I'm not going to worry that much about it. That seems to be the attitude.
Oh, yeah, and the thing with McCain and being this war hero, and he's a patriot, and he ought to be president because he is such a patriot, just drives me up the wall.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you've been in the service, and more power to him. I mean, he spent time in the prison camp, tortured, all that. All the more reason that he ought to be against a war. All the more reason that he ought to be against torture. And evidently, he's not against either of those things.
Okay, well, I was just calling to let you know about our new congressperson in the House, and how she got booed by the Republicans because she just spoke against the war.
Well, I'm going to have to try and find some video on that. I'd like to see that. Thanks for letting me know.
I can send you a link if you want.
Yeah, please do. GuyJames@thegyjamesshow.com.
Okay, we'll do.
Thanks, Monique. Good to hear from you.
And if you ever come out to Arizona, you're more than welcome to come and have a nice dinner here.
Oh, man. Hey, let me ask you. Is it Mesa that's got that great barbecue place? They got this little downtown area with the old brick buildings up against one another, and there's this fabulous barbecue place and an old-time...
I'm not familiar with that.
All right. I'm going to have that.
We have a lot of good food out here.
Oh, yeah. Thanks so much for calling. Great to hear from you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
I am hungry. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us here in the program. No, I did not hear about that, and I am anxious to try and find out what I can about that tonight. If that's Jackie Speer. Very good. And I do want to remind everybody that coming up at 5 o'clock, we got Mark Levine, and Mark is always right on target. Mark always has a good show. Mark knows what he's talking about. He's a good old, he's a Washingtonian now. I don't think Mark's originally from Washington, but he lives there now, and he knows the ins. He's got the inside scoop. That's right. So do stay tuned to hear Mark and all of our great shows here, and John Fox and Peter and Bob. My goodness, we got a great lineup here on the Head On Radio Network. Dr. Bill, the whole gang. It's just, we are a proud member of the Head On Radio Network. You got time for a call yet. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I was interested in a couple of stories that came across today that Senator Craig... Doggone it, you know, when you need a helping hand and you know you're down and out, what's that song? When you're down in trouble and you need a helping hand. Well, anyway, I think that's kind of how it goes. Well, Senator Craig is trying to team up with Senator Vitter and support him. Said he should not resign over his public sex scandal, and he can talk from experience. Senator Craig from Idaho, of course, you all know, was among several GOP senators who say Vitter's testimony in the D.C. Madam prostitution case should not compel his resignation. And see, it's only Bill Clinton who should resign when anything like this comes up. It's only Bill Clinton. First and foremost, in these kinds of issues, Craig said, it's the state and the relationship you have with your state that really determines where you ought to go, Craig said. And that was certainly my case. The Senate itself wasn't going to judge me. I would allow the citizens of my state to do so. He would allow his citizens of the state to. And there is still strong support there. Well, Larry, old boy, I'd like to see you try and run for office again and see if you got in, see how those people in Idaho, I don't think they cottoned to your behavior. Anyway, Craig went through his own trial by media. You know, I can't walk in I cannot walk in an airport restroom anymore, or any public restroom without fear of guys, you know, reaching under the, you know what I'm talking about. that'd be a good way to get some broken fingers, baby. But Craig went through his own trial by media last year after his arrest and a guilty plea for soliciting sex from an undercover male officer in Minneapolis Airport. And Craig, who later tried to withdraw his guilty plea, said support from Idahoans convinced him to reverse his pledge to resign last year. And he added that his decision last month not to file for re-election predated his controversy. Sure, Larry. Yeah, we all know you were going to quit. And never mind that you never mentioned you were going to quit before all this happened. But anyway. lawyers for Deborah Jane Palfrey, the so-called D.C. madam, have called Vitter to testify in this upcoming case, according to media reports. And the Louisiana senator last year acknowledged a serious sin, but has spoken little about it since, and his office didn't respond to calls for comment this week. So Craig said that he's told Vitter he regretted the fact that his own case seemed to cause the media to dredge up and rehash Vitter's situation. And he also said he sympathizes with Vitter's treatment by the media. Well, poor boy. He said, my story became a situation where my wife and I watched it almost as if it were caricatures out there being talked about, Craig said. It certainly wasn't me. Who the hell was it? But that was quite typical in a 24/7 news cycle like we have today. While Senator Mary Landrieu has avoided the topic of whether Vitter should go, the Louisiana Democratic Party has issued several statements urging his resignation. No way has this already been dealt with. We're dealing with it day by day, State Democratic Party Chairman Chris Whittington said Tuesday. It's a continuous distraction from his work on behalf of our state, and it's a continuous blight on the state of Louisiana to have a sitting senator connected to a prostitution ring. And under Louisiana law, Republican Governor Bobby Jindal will have the right to replace Vitter, meaning a Vitter resignation may do little to tip the 50-41-49 partisan split. And I say this, I tell you this story about Vitter as a very concerned person, and I have every reason to talk about it because, after all, I am, and lest you doubt this, I can show you the documentation, I am an official colonel of the state of Louisiana. Yes, Governor Edwin Edwards made me an official colonel of the state of Louisiana. So I'm concerned that my adopted state of Louisiana is being shamed by Senator Vitter. Yes, sir. I've not used that excuse before, but there you go. And that's the truth. I am a colonel of the state of Louisiana. Was presented the honor by former now parolee, I think, Governor Edwin Edwards himself. There's not a lot of people that can say that, governor and parolee. You know, we're always talking about China, and I ran across a couple of, we only got a couple of minutes left, but I did want to get this in today. The U.S. is set to grow a mere 0.5% in 2008. Not very good growing. That's from the International Monetary Fund. And that's despite the government stimulus package that we'll be receiving soon. And in 2009, is expected to improve only to a mere 0.6%, a modest recovery from the problems we're having. And just to give an example of other countries around the world, China is expected to continue to expand at a rate of 9.3% in 2008 and 9.5% in 2009. Man, oh man. Wow, they're putting everybody to sleep in growth, the Chinese are. And amazing. 9.3% growth in 2008 and 9.5% in 2009. And Europe is growing at a rate of only about 1.4% this year, down from its forecast of 1.6%. But here we are at 0.5%. So not good economic news on the horizon for the United States, at least for the next year. So we got that to look forward to. Well, we had so much more we could have talked about today, and we ran out of time. I do thank you for your phone calls, and I thank you for your listenership. Always appreciated very, very much. All of us here on the Head On Radio Network know that we have a very loyal following, a very astute following. I think our listeners are as well-versed on the subject of politics as anybody you will find anywhere. And I'd stake my reputation on that. And I'm always always amazed at the comments that I get from some of you. Great call we had today from Rama. Everybody that throws their 2 cents worth in has always got something profound to say, it seems. And it always amazes me that you folks keep up with this so much. I spend a great deal of time trying to keep up with everything on the political scene. And I know many of you do as well, and it's a pleasure talking to you every day. Anyway, I do want to remind you that this is the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back with you again live on Tuesday, and I do hope you have yourselves a great weekend. Stay tuned for Mark Levine's show. It's going to be a good one. And don't forget, thanks to Billy Shears, our music director, and don't forget you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Later, gang.
And now from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. You know, I like to talk about things the government does not want you to hear, but really, I like to talk about anything that people don't want you to hear, particularly when it involves a powerful, shadowy organization with lots of money and lots of adherents and lots of secretiveness. Last week, I focused on Reverend Sun Myung Moon, a very powerful man who considers himself the Messiah and has started a religion that most consider a very dangerous cult. I want to talk today about another possible religion, possible cult, possible danger, something that is extremely controversial in Hollywood and even in Washington. And my guest today, Tori Christman, has achieved the second highest level of the Church of Scientology, a church begun by L. Ron Hubbard, a science fiction writer back in the 1950s, that has grown today to include, I'm not quite sure how many adherents, I'll ask Tori in a second, but my understanding is it's tens of thousands. I myself went to a Church of Scientology once in Los Angeles, where I, just out of curiosity, walked in. I had heard all kinds of things about it and took one of their personality tests. And in that test, they basically said, if you've ever been unhappy, if you've ever been sad, if you've ever been wondering about whether your life is good or not, then you must join the Church of Scientology. I started laughing, given that everyone has done that. But Tori Christman has had a much larger experience in the church. I walked out after that day. She was there for 30 years. Tori Christman, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hey, thank you so much. Thank you, Mark. It's good to talk to you.
It's very good to have you on. I got to tell you, this has been a highly anticipated show, not just by me, but by lots of my listeners, as well as a whole organization called Anonymous that we will get to later on in the broadcast. Let me start with you and your history. When is it that you first got into the Church of Scientology?
1969. I was a hippie. I'd gone back. I was, you know, into the whole I lived in San Francisco. I was a hippie. I got into looking for higher powers, blah, blah, blah. Got into drugs. Ended up, my parents flew me back home. In the hospital, I literally, these Scientologists came in and gave me the book Dianetics. I went
back
while
you were in the hospital.
Pardon me?
While you were in the hospital.
Yeah, I had shot up heroin once. Which Scientology,
wow,
since I've left, has said many times I was a heroin addict, I was a heroin dealer, which is totally lie. I hit up heroin once when I was in San Francisco.
And you were in the hospital for it, and they came in while you were in that weakened state.
Right.
And